Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us here in the second hour. We are talking with Mike Mitchum from Stop Smart Meters over in the UK, and I'd like to get into more now in the next segment here in terms of the creation of a new artificial biosphere, pretty much. This system that I think is going to be inevitably put in place if we see the progression of the technology, as Mike has lined out here, in order to basically just maintain those normal, you know, procedures that we see in the natural world, because this technology is effectively destroying, a lot of the things that we see. I mean, a clear example is the bees, Mike, and we can talk a little bit more about that and also what's being done to kind of remedy the problem as opposed to, let's say, you know, cut back on the development of the technology. It's a response with more of the same. In other words, DARPA is looking at creating these small mechanical bees, to take over the production of pollinating instead of, you know, looking at the natural world. Is this where things are going? Is this what they're trying to actively do to create an artificial biosphere that's going to keep things going, the momentum of the natural world going?
It's a deep question. If you look at the facts, what we have available to us and have had for some time is a heads up of what kinds of solutions, faux solutions in my mind, and not ideal solutions are being worked on to some of the big problems that we have as a civilization. The bees particularly are affected by electromagnetic fields. There have been numerous studies done that have shown if you place a mobile phone or the base station for a cordless phone unit into a beehive, the bees won't be able to return. They use delicate frequencies and energies to navigate and to communicate. And this is one possible, very likely reason why we're seeing such huge rises in colony collapse disorder all over the industrialized world, where these wireless technologies are being rolled out. And even though over the last 12 months or so here, at least in the UK, we have seen some focus on this issue, where pesticides and herbicides, insecticides, etc., have been blamed specifically near nicotinoids, where a relatively successful campaign was run to raise awareness of these things and for government to take action. What's telling is, again, that there is no mention. The neglected aspect here is that there is no talk about this strategic technology that the future of our energy grid and ways in which we communicate and go about our daily lives. There's no talk of the impact that has. So what we're seeing now as solutions to this problem, which could potentially be addressed by rolling back the wireless technologies that are causing it, instead what we're seeing is the likes of the University of Sussex engage in projects to upload the consciousness of a bee to a robotic bee by the year after next, by 2015. And so where this naturally then leads is to the question of if we are creating a planet that is incapable of sustaining the natural order of things, incapable of sustaining our pollinators, and make no mistake, all pollinators are affected by this, and we'll be publishing a report over the coming weeks on how many pollinators are affected by this radiation. If we're creating a planet that is incapable of supporting that natural pollination role and the beings that operate it, what happens, and our solution to that is to create a robotic version of those species. What happens when we create a planet that's incapable of supporting natural human life? Where does that lead on? And at that point, you have to look at what other initiatives are being pursued in the name of science and progress. And I would refer any listeners to gf2045.com that has the who's who of transhumanists on it.
Yeah.
Seeking to promote the idea that assimilating the human body and mind with technology is the next logical step in our evolution. And this is very real. There is billions of dollars being thrown into this. Ray Kurzweil, who is a pioneer of transhumanism, is now acting as a director, I believe, at Google. And what they are talking about is a very clearly defined roadmap where between now and prior to now, because they've been working on this for quite some time, and 2045, we will see steps being taken to create human avatars. And so we've had prompts of this in the, you know, by Hollywood, where human consciousness is either cloned or in some way uploaded to an artificial version of yourself so that you can exist in cyberspace and potentially achieve immortality. And if that sounds crazy to you, it's because it is. And we have people that are genuinely pursuing these kinds of initiatives in the face of the natural order of the world increasingly struggling and showing, you know, stress symptoms, and the markers are there. You know, if we lose our pollinators, we're in big trouble, and we are losing them. So what's your view on where this potentially goes, Henry?
Well, I think it's inevitable that it's going to go into, if it continues, that it's going to go into the realm of, at some stage, you will need to have all processes for human life and potentially other life on the planet as well, in terms of animals, produced artificially. I mean, the development of artificial uteruses is going on right now, you know, and they're trying to. I think we're going to see, and I mentioned this too in the break, a reversal of that Children of Men kind of scenario, where maybe it's not the women that's going to be infertile, it's primarily the men, because of what you mentioned with the declining sperm quality and rates and everything else, that you basically come to a conclusion where, and I think there's another, also a UK company, by the way, that are developing artificial sperm, I believe. And so when you piece all these things together, you realize that, okay, somewhere down the line here, there might be a step taken by government, or, you know, indirectly by government through a private company who got the contracts to do this thing, to basically take over the role of the perpetuation of the human species. And we're going to be in a realm where these new, well, I would call them creatures, really, because we wouldn't know what it is at that stage, would be under complete subservience to those who have produced them. And just imagine the legal and the contractual work around this. And it's just, I mean, it is like a sci-fi movie. But the fact is that, you know, when you look at the website that you mentioned, GF2045, it's very much also, there's a lot of spiritual kind of, what do you call them? Like they're, you know, guidance people that are on board with this project. There's very much, yeah, they're trying to blanket, you know, the whole field that, okay, you know, what question of God do we incorporate into this? And it means that they are, in that sense, holistic and also honest in their approach, that they really want to try to tackle this problem and from all different angles. The question is, though, if they're going to be able to pull it off, and I've had my doubts about that for some time now, if you basically, with machinery, robotics, and you know, neural circuitry and everything else, can actually manage to reproduce all the things that we see in the natural world. What do you think about that, Mike?
Ooh, well, I'd firstly say that I don't believe their sales speak. The taking the example of the smart meter issue, the adverts speak of this utopia if you get a smart meter. You know, there's there's very high budget marketing campaigns that are promoting these smart meters now across the world. And God, they sound good if you haven't got your wits about you. And if you're not applying that very important link between the stimulus and the response, and you're not applying critical thought, and you're not seeking to really understand what it is that you're being sold here, then you could get very easily led into the impression that a smart meter will help you reduce your bills, will allow you to take control of your energy, and nothing could be further from the truth. This is, you know, the reality versus the sales speak is that this is about, this is a corporate-led initiative on behalf of corporate institutional shareholders to try to get more yield from the customer base. That's what it's about. At least at the corporate level, who knows, you know, how deep this goes and where it goes beyond that. So despite the fact that the people that are selling this and that have put these websites together that are promoting this idea, and they talk very lucidly about how this will allow humanity to unite and for peace and freedom on Earth to be achieved, we've heard that before, and we're not buying it anymore. You know, I wouldn't consider myself to be a Luddite, but if you look at the Luddite movement, you know, what they saw was that, yeah, in a certain context, the technology might have some application, but when you take into account the economic circumstances that we are in, and I would use as one example the fact that we have a debt-based, interest-bearing creation of money. You know, we have a debt-based financial system that applies interest to any money that is created, and that puts us on the back foot from the word go. We're not in a situation where humanity has had the playing field laid out for it to thrive and to live freely and to live peacefully and to live independently. We have the red carpet that's been laid out for us to the road to serfdom. And this is shown very clearly by virtue of the fact that we are all working longer hours. We're not getting any richer. Some people are getting richer, but by and large, people are struggling. This is why we now have, you know, both parents in many families having to go out to work, not being able to spend time with children, and breakdown in families, etc. But this is because the economic system that we have is fundamentally, whether it's designed to do this or not, what it actually does is it removes wealth, or it migrates wealth from the system recipients, or the system players, to the people that own the system, or the organizations and institutions that own the system. So I don't see as being in anything like the situation presently or in the near future where this vision that the transhumanist pushes are pushing is going to deliver what they're selling.
What it means is, I think you would have to set up a different set of components for people who are not interested in going down this pathway. I think where you would have to have, and again, you know, hate to make that analogy, but you know, in popular culture, it's been made a couple of times before in movies, where you basically have a split in the species, more or less, and you have these people living on the outskirts of these mega cities, which are completely technologically run, and it might be all nice and dandy in there for a while. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be there to begin with, but it might even function and work for a little bit. But the problem is that when you have all of these kinds of centralized system, including the smart grid and everything else, where you have it, it's not built on small, you know, cells, but it's built on this massive centralized infrastructure. If that fails, you have a tremendous collapse of the whole system, and you have no preservation whatsoever within it. And as long as I've been watching this now, it's almost like I think that this is kind of part of the setup, if you will, because if you want to go down that route and talk about plans for humanity and potential soft depopulation, you know, kill off to cull the human herd, if you will, then this seems to be the strategy to that they've preferred, that you do it with, you market it as the solution, but in the meantime, in the long run, this is actually what's going to kill off people, because it's not going to be able to sustain itself. And once you have the right hackers in place, even in this regard, or the right technology going rogue or something like that, you're going to have a tremendous setback in the entire system. So the question becomes, of course, of who's behind the structure and who's behind the design of this. As you've been watching the smart meters and everything else and that unfold, what's your take in on who's behind this, Mike?
Well, from a corporate point of view, we have huge organizations like IBM who have put these ideas forward into the consciousness of the industry. They have a great pedigree in invasive technology, having been the company that created the Holarith, without which the Holocaust would have been very difficult for the Nazi regime to implement. IBM were quite happy to supply the computational equipment, and it was, I believe, the first major type of computer to the Nazis. And they had a recurring revenue business where they were supplying, additional punch cards as and when they were needed. So, business was good for IBM during and before World War II. And they are an enormous organization. They have hundreds of thousands of people. Most people tend to only really experience them every so often when they pop up on the TV and they say, "I'm an IBMer, I'm working for a smarter planet." And IBM are central, in my view, to this agenda as it unfolds. They have the technology, they have the processes, they have the appetite, they have the blind compulsion to making this dream a reality. But they're not the only ones. Obviously the energy companies, the utility companies benefit from this. The level of data that's being gathered is of huge appeal to governments, to law enforcement, to social services, to many, many organizations across the spectrum. But what's interesting is that one of the first stories we published on our website was the result of a freedom of information request put forward by Angel Fazio of the National Toxic Encephalopathy Foundation out in the States. And he had asked where the funding for smart grid was coming from in the US and was surprised to receive confirmation of two codes for grants that had been applied to the kicking off part, at least part of the smart grid initiative with NV Energy out in the States. And the first code that he was given was a fairly innocuous general grant budget. But the second one he traced back, and we've got details of this on our website still. The second one he traced back to funding from the US Army Research and Development Unit. So this is an energy agenda that we're being sold on as a means to remove estimated billing, which we have in the UK, and to take control of your energy. And if that stands up to scrutiny and to reason, then what is the military doing investing in it? And why don't we know?
I know.
And the maybe part of the answer here is coming in. Well, I don't know. I'm open to ideas on this, but something else on my radar screen, no pun intended, is the fact that we now have the market for unmanned aerial vehicles, aka drones, bearing down on smart meters now. This is set to become the UAV market globally, which is building on a technology for unmanned vehicles flown by wire effectively from remote on-ground locations, having revolutionized warfare and left some pilots unable to live with themselves because of the horrors that they visited on certain parts of the population. This market is set to be worth $400 billion, which is a staggering amount of money. And it's coming very, very quickly. Within the US, there is federal aviation regulation coming by 2015. Within the EU, regulation is being sought by 2018. And I mentioned smart meter drones because we have companies like Arad Technologies, which is an Israeli smart meter company that's in talks, apparently, in certain parts of the world, including here in the UK, according to stories that I've read, with companies here to deploy smart meter drones. So aerial vehicles that will detect leaks. This is the sales speak. It will detect leaks. It will measure consumption, and it will help to identify water theft. And what's interesting is that they're saying, and while we're at it, we can look at traffic monitoring. We can we can do sea and land rescue. Isn't that great? We're just the guys you've been waiting for. And again, it's being sold with, you know, pilots get tired and there's some really dirty jobs that they don't want to do. So these drones could do them, monitoring fishing grounds, etc. And so what is potentially on the cards here is a sky that's not only full of streaky white clouds in the next few years, but is actually filled with drones that are, that have got the capability to do anything and everything that the corporations that have invested in them decide. Going to kind of add to that and maybe talk a little bit about the whole water issue and why this problem exists in the first place. We have within, again, within the UK, there's enough water lost per day to meet the needs of 21.5 million homes. That's lost through leaks within the system. We have aging infrastructure. There's 3.3 billion litres of water lost each day. What's interesting, though, is that the regulator here, Ofwat, limits the amount of money that can be spent by water companies on fixing leaks. So there is a hard ceiling that the regulator, i.e., you know, the government agency that's responsible for regulating the water industry, actually sets a limit, a maximum amount that water companies can spend on fixing leaks. Yeah, so there is a problem there anyway. We have leaks, but the water companies can only do so much. The World Bank estimates that water wastage costs $14 billion per annum. We won't talk about how much the World Bank causes, you know, the population on an annual basis, but they believe that the cost of water wastage is $14 billion. And they say that this is enough for 200 million. It's actually enough to save 200 million lives. But what's not being said is the fact that water resources globally are being privatized. So whilst on paper, that might be enough water that's lost through wastage and why we ostensibly need these technologies and surveillance to reduce the number of leaks, the water isn't going to the population anyway, unless you can show us some green for it. You know, the populations of the planet now, in particularly in third world countries, in South America, in parts of Africa, water resources that were previously owned under, you know, common rights by the people that lived in those areas are being snapped up thanks to corrupt government policy and corporations who are looking to make money. And so more people are going thirsty now, not less. There's a fantastic documentary called Flow that talks about this issue in detail, but it's, you know, the Thames Water, Suez, Veolia, and other mega corporations are snapping up water resources. And what is a huge concern for me in the UK, and should be for all of us, is the fact that we have this fracking agenda now. And I'm seemingly going on a tangent here, but trust me, I'll come back to
it. It's a good one. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, you've had Ian Crane, who's done phenomenal work raising awareness about fracking here in the UK. And we've got one of his videos on our website where he lays out the issue. This is another just terrible solution to the problem that we have of consuming energy, which could be avoided with a radical redress of the economy. But besides the point, within the southeast of the UK, we've been designated as an area with serious water stress. And only a couple of months ago, Owen Paterson, the Environment Secretary, came out and said, we want to introduce compulsory water metering within the UK, within parts of the UK, because we have climate change, we have population increases, we have these water-stressed areas. Everybody needs to go on a meter. But what wasn't talked about then, and actually within 24 hours or so, the government hauled him up and basically issued a notice saying that this wasn't the case. You weren't going to be forced to have a water meter. But, you know, the cat was out of the bag. This is where they're trying to take us. Fracking uses up to 20 million litres of fresh water per well.
20 million litres per well.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And yeah, did not know that there was that much.
Yeah, it's between, on average, between 5 and 20 million liters of fresh water per well, and
that's like until the well is drained, or is it per year or something like that?
Until they've got their yield, yeah. Basically.
Okay.
So it potentially could be a heck of a lot more. It really depends on the size of the well and how much they figure they can get out.
Right.
But this fresh water. So they can't use seawater. It has to be fresh water. Has a combination of sand, and which they like talking about, and this toxic cocktail of chemicals, up to 300 chemicals, proprietary mix. We don't really know what's in this stuff, but you wouldn't want to drink it. Is being pumped into the ground in huge, huge volumes. And as a result of that contamination of the water, which again is fresh water, it's lost to the water supply forever because it's contaminated. And again, have a look at Ian's stuff to see what the effects are of that on communities. But within the southeast of the UK alone, and 64% of the UK has been earmarked for fracking, but just within the southeast, they're planning on drilling 36,000 wells. So if you do the quick maths on that, that's up to and possibly exceeding 72 trillion litres of fresh water that will disappear from the water supply forever. And guess
what, folks?
It's funny
that, these green environmentalists and everything else is like that's in the government and pushing for all these things. For us, it's absolutely okay for the companies to get these contracts to do this kind of stuff. You know, talk about double standards. This is pathetic, ridiculous.
It is, and entirely avoidable, but the solution that's being rolled out is that we're going to have to meter your water much
more
closely.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to diminish in your outtake. You can't take as many showers now. But we're going to fluoridate your water as well. By the way, on top of it, just to help you out with your teeth. So.
Right. Indeed.
Yeah.
So. Another kind of fringe angle associated with that, given that we're on the subject of water, is that when you look at smart water meters, and some of these meters are constantly emitting these spikes in microwave radiation, in some cases up to 190,000 pulses a day. You look at the impact of electromagnetic radiation on water, and particularly, the paper I mentioned earlier from Dr. Andrew Goldsworthy, you could see that if you expose water to microwave radiation for a given period of time, when you then consume that water, it can have a similar effect on the body, certain parts of the body, as if you were exposed to that electromagnetic radiation yourself. So just because that smart water meter might be sitting outside of your house doesn't mean that you won't be impacted by it. And within London, we have an aging Victorian plumbing system that has, in a large amount, to a large extent, leaded pipes. And it just happens that when you apply electromagnetic fields to leaded pipes, the lead comes away.
That's right.
And so you're then consuming lead, which is highly toxic to the body. And if you're using your mobile phone and your blood-brain barrier is opening, then you've got big problems.
You got a nice cocktail of death right there.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, jeez.
It might not kill you immediately, but I can't see any kind of evidence at the moment that we're getting healthier as a civilization. We are ailing. We are badly, badly ailing.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
You know, the range of symptoms, a lot of them can be coped with, a lot of them can be reversed. But Professor Ollie Hansen, who was over here in the UK yesterday, I went to his talk, he did a great talk. He's talked about the potential for irreversible sterility to happen within five generations.
He was from the Karolinska Institute, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
People that aren't familiar with Karolinska, it's the institute that gives out the Nobel Prize for medicine, I believe. And Professor Hansen works in the neurology department there.
Right.
He also, I think, works at the Royal Institute of Technology in Sweden.
Stockholm, yeah, that's right.
So, and irreversible sterility plays into the point, coming back to what you were saying.
Well, look
into
at that,
corporate
then.
Hands.
Yeah, and you know, this whole aspect of what's going on can't solely be blamed on ignorance. Surely we have people part of the whole process as a whole, the conveyor belt of just death here that we're talking about, practically. And not to over dramatize this, but I mean, if we look at it as a whole, that's what's going on here. Certainly then on certain incremental parts in this conveyor belt, you have perhaps ignorant people who just, you know, are part of the process. They don't really realize what they're doing. They haven't done their research and work to understand what they're part of. But we can't blame ignorance all the way, surely. There has to be some kind of coherence here in people who are aware of the whole treadmill. What do you think, Mike?
I would agree. You had Thomas Sheridan on your show recently, which was a great interview that you did. And I would encourage anyone that hasn't listened to it to give it a listen. The focal point was Russell Brand. But Thomas talks extensively about psychopathy. And I think something, again, that isn't generally known about, but Thomas has written two or three books on this issue now, is the presence of psychopaths within society. They're a reality. Some estimates put it at 4% of the population, of people that do not have the means to empathize with their fellow human beings. Just to kind of segue on that, something that we published recently, I believe it was Deborah Davis. It was a clip from a presentation she did last summer in Canada, where she said that we are potentially facing the prospect of a generation that has no capability to empathize with their fellow man, because we're spending so much of our time, and our kids are spending so much of their time locked into their devices and not interacting with their friends and with society. They're losing the skills, they're losing the connections. And that potentially plays in very nicely to some of these corporate initiatives, where I think it's probably not too controversial for me to say that we do exist in an age where we have institutional psychopathy, we have corporate psychopathy, where you have to make very cutthroat decisions about who exists and who doesn't within your business in order to save the business. And we exist in this place, I think, because of the economic system that we have today and that we've inherited, that does not provide us with the means to thrive. So what we have within society is both individual and institutional psychopathy. I think a large part of this is about people just following orders.
Yeah,
but as we know from the Nuremberg trials, that's no excuse. And we remind the energy and water companies through a notice serving engine we have on our website that they are accountable for their actions and that we have human rights. But what some people mistakenly think is that because they've been given the instructions by on high for this to happen and these technologies to be introduced, that absolves them of responsibility. Hilariously, I served notice to a government agency recently on the fracking issue and individuals within it. And a reply that I got essentially said, look, we're not responsible for any actions. If you're trying to intimidate us, it won't work. And we're not responsible for the decisions that we take. And I reminded them that they are. Yeah. And this is the attitude that you have. You have people that are thinking, it's not my responsibility. It's not going to come back and bite me. But the problem is we have the responsibility as individuals to be responsible for our actions. And we absolutely can be held accountable no matter how corrupt you might think the justice system is. We have the rights to exist free of intrusive, harmful technologies. And if the people that are pushing these things continue to do so, they can be absolutely held accountable for their actions. So I think we also need to remind the people that are promoting these technologies, whether they're government agencies, whether they are serving in corporate roles within energy and utility companies, that they're going to have to live with the consequences of the actions and decisions that they're taking today, and they might not like what those consequences are. I think it was Ayn Rand that said, you can ignore reality, but you cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. Yeah. And woe betide those who try to implement these technologies in full knowledge, which they all now have, by the way. We've served over 100,000 notices via our notice serving engine on behalf of about 1,300 people.
Right.
They've been notified at least 1,300 times that these technologies are harmful and we don't want them.
Right.
So institutional or individual psychopathy or not, ultimately we will be looking to hold people accountable, and we can all do that.
Now, there are so many crooks out there that obviously have rigged the system in place, used it and tweaked it in their favor. But it's a point well made that you say there, that it's also the compliance, if you will, of the masses, of the people that are ultimately enabling this activity at least to go further. I mean, there's to a certain point, you can be outside of the knowledge base of what's going on. But after a certain, time, it's like, oh, all right, something is going on here. It's time to try to act on this or change the behavior in some way. Or at the very least, or which is, the point I usually stress, it's to remove your support for that structure and system so that it will effectively collapse, But what is the prospect that people actually can disconnect from the majority of this, because that's also very difficult, of course. It's very difficult for people to organize. This is largely something that's been kind of taken out of our knowledge base, if you will, from schooling and onwards. You always go to the government, if you will, to try to have them fix the problems when in many extents they are partially, and if some cases even fully responsible for these things to occur. So there is a kind of a pacification, I think, that has been very, very planned in this process. But is there a way to disconnect from the services, from as many of these aspects as possible to try to secure some kind of health in the process? What do you think, Mike? What's your take on this?
Any steps that you can take to reduce your own exposure will be paid back to you. Just because these technologies roll out at a frightening pace doesn't mean that you can't take steps, and that this isn't something that we can stop and reverse at some point. I'm not under the illusion that we're going to make fundamental changes in these industries anytime soon. But so the emphasis then becomes on trying to make sure that you are protected from some of these environmental toxins wherever possible. Wire your house, don't get rid of your wireless devices and gadgets, or keep them on airplane mode if you have to use them. Steps that you can take to reduce your own exposure will make a real difference, especially if you're in a relationship, if you're a young adult, if you have a partner. You just talking about the fertility thing, which can potentially affect both men and women. Men reproduce sperm every 90 days, I think. Women, however, have all the eggs that they are ever going to use with them the day that they're born. So reduce your own exposure and it will make a big difference. This is not futile. A lot of people say, "Oh, these wireless signals have been around since the Big Bang." You know, we have a sea of radiation. The truth of the matter is that we do have natural background radiation, but it's at 0.00000001 microwatts per meter squared. And what we have as a supposed safety level now by the ICNRP, this private group that whose standards were voted out of date and obsolete by European Parliament 5 years ago, their standards say you can have multiple technologies sitting in your pocket that emit up to 9 million microwatts per square meter. And that's a quintillion times increase. You know, these are not weak fields. As Ollie Johansson put it, this is a biblical increase in our exposure to electromagnetic radiation. So get those technologies off your body and put them in a drawer, ideally switch them off, put them in airplane mode, or take measures to get you and your family wired and moved away from the wireless technologies.
I just wanted to ask you, what does airplane mode, what does that really do? It turns off Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, or what does it do exactly?
Yeah, it does. It disconnects the wireless features. So I believe with some kinds of phone, I think the iPhone is capable of actually being used as a repeater, even if it's switched off for other iPhones. So if you're sitting between somebody else's iPhone who's making a call and the cell tower, if your iPhone is switched off, then it can be used as a repeater to enhance the signal. So you need to switch it onto airplane mode before you switch it off for that not to happen.
So it's another little hive kind of technology, really. It's piggybacking on everyone who's around you. It creates a network with all the phones that's in the area to save bandwidth, basically, right?
Exactly. It's called airplane mode because it was devised to stop wireless gadgets from interfering with sensitive electrical equipment on airliners. But we all have very sensitive electrical equipment within our bodies. So, you know, you could call it bio-friendly mode, whatever you like.
But yeah, yeah.
To mention maybe, you know, what people can do to disconnect here as well, and what measures people can take. I want to give a plug to Richard Grove and Lisa at Tragedy and Hope and the work that they do in providing people with the means to liberate themselves cognitively from this system. I know that you've had Rich on the show, and what he's done is kind of built on some work that, in my mind at least, that Jan Irving does around the Trivium method. And We have, you know, tools available to us that provide us with the means to cut through the spin that's being sold to us on a day-to-day basis by advertisers, by politicians, by news people. And I would recommend, you know, if anybody had, you know, has gone through the schooling system and has come out of it like I was with no real intellectual toolkit to be able to cut through some of these very slick, you know, emotionally charged sales pitches that are being put out there by the mobile phone companies and by anybody pitching a product, then I'd encourage you to plug into the guys at Tragedy and Hope and at triviumeducation.com and give yourselves the means to disconnect from the flannel that is given to us on a daily basis by those trying to sell us on these kinds of agendas. That's the, you know, the toolkit that we're talking about. You know, will allow you to, you know, feed yourself with information and provide you with a robust means to tackle some of the sophists and professional rhetoricians who go about trying to convince us that their way is the right way, and we don't tend to kind of get introduced to us the means to intellectually defend ourselves against that sort of thing. So I just wanted to quickly plug that.
Now, is there any other aspect you feel is important to talk about or give out here before we you know, begin to wrap things up at this time, Mike?
Let's see. We've covered quite a bit today, Henrik.
We sure have, yeah. It's daunting, but it's absolutely necessary. I think mankind will never truly get anywhere if we refuse to examine the dark aspects of both ourselves, but also what we enable by our unwillingness to examine these things. Because it really, I go back to that always. It really is ourselves that become the enabler of it when we do not want to look at it or we're too scared. It's like I heard it was brought up elsewhere. It's basically like one of these, like a nightmare zone. You just do the quick as you can to kind of run past it because you're just so afraid of it. But the fact is that you have to build up the courage and the strength to look the beast in the eyes, if you know what I mean, as an analogy, and really try to get in there and analyze it and look at it. And I think it's ultimately about self interest in that regard. Like, are we interested in who we are, what we're doing here, our own journey as a human being, and also ultimately then in the extension, our surrounding, what's happening around us, and really, become aware and learn, right? That's really where the key to all of these things are, because ignorance is something that we've been fed on for such a long time, because we become easily controllable, we become extensively manageable in that regard, and even for the bigger system at large, which may or may not be wired into these supercomputers that are running tests on us in order to predict future behavior and everything else. It's only when our predictability becomes very high on the scale, if you will, that we become controllable and manageable by the systems that's in place.
Absolutely. I couldn't have put it better. Behaviorism and the whole field of studying human psychology and action has been a reality for I dare say, anything further, but formally at least for decades. But I think this goes much, much further back. There are groups of people who seek to exploit rather than live in harmony with those around them. And that is just a fact of life. You have Mark Passio, I believe, coming on your show soon.
Yes. Right, Henry? Yes, it's coming up as actually the same day as we're recording this one, so it's going to go up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to listening to that. I tuned into Mark's epic 7-hour presentation.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Libertopia, I think, and he uses colorful language, and I like his forthrightness. And what Mark puts very clearly is the fact that we have these sacred feminine and sacred masculine aspects to our mind, where we're able to ponder the universe and our own existence and conceive of different thoughts and concepts, etc. But if we're going to make any meaningful change, we have to marry that side of ourselves with what he calls the divine masculine side, which is involved with taking action. So I think it's important that we reclaim our intellectual sovereignty, and that we really try to figure out what are the realities of any given situation before we take action, because potentially you can run off down a blind alley and be extremely effective at helping to promote some of these nefarious initiatives, because they are so well packaged as answers for humanity. But your class of listener here on Red Ice does not need me to say what you should do. We've got loads of ideas on our website for things that you can do. We have a section dedicated to it. What I would kind of say just in closure is the hour is late, and we have to start engaging and start locating the courage and dispel the fear that has been constructed for us to actually start making some change in the direction that we think change needs to be made in. Let's do it. This is going to be the greatest comeback in the history of humanity.
All right, very good. Positive note to end things on. We really appreciate your time and input on all of these things. Mike, we're glad to, of course, finally have you on the program as well. Please give us the URL again before we end for this time.
It's stopsmartmeters.org.uk. Thank you very much for having me on, Henrik. It's been a pleasure and a real honor. So thank you.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's it for this program. I hope you've learned something new. I want to say thank you for joining us here in the members section for your continued support, as you are the ones who enable us to expand in our coverage. My thanks to the team, and I hope you have a great weekend wherever you are. We'll speak to you in just a few. Bye-bye.